Big market, watch it.
Get our only notification.
Is it free?
Yeah, of course it is. Won't you?
Richie, Simon, Danny, Mark, Sean, Paul, Curtis.
Will's here too.
Okay. Arcee and Kay. Yeah, Kay. Kay's kind of shadowy.
Justin's on Shivo.
Justin. Okay. Okay, so then Gagi will be here in a second. He was here early, but I guess now he's going to be late. All right, so shall we start? We'll go to Gagik when Gagik shows up. Announcements, any announcements? One announcement is we're going to have another data challenge meeting this Friday at 11 o'clock. Is that right, Curtis?
I think so. Look, I think that, is it 11 or 11? Let me just look on the calendar.
It's 11 o'clock.
Listed as 11, yeah.
Okay. Data challenge meeting. Anything else? We got Sandy all stirred up about the SRM.
I saw that, yeah. The SRM. It's not like we haven't been telling her this for 2 years.
Yeah, she was actually mad at me, so we'll take that explanation offline.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought that we put Gagik near the front in case you didn't want to listen to the entire rest of the meeting. So why don't we go ahead and do that? Why don't we start with him since, you know, there's been a huge build-up for this. And,
yep.
You know, and we're all dying to hear what you're going to say, Gagik.
Okay,
so this is, for those of you who don't know, this is Gagik Gavalian. He's with ODU, right?
Yeah.
Working on class 12, class and class 12, class 6 and 12, no?
No.
Class 6.
He's working on data mining.
Data mining, class 6 data, actually.
Right,
So we're mining the class 6 data.
Okay, and...
I'm doing the distributed cloud computing thing for class 6.
Okay, so Hall B types will be familiar with no Gagik for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's going to tell us about a little amplification on talk he gave at the offline software review back in November.
Can you adjust the JLab camera?
Ah, okay. Yes. Let me get this thing.
Big one.
That is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, so I should use this camera.
What pointer in that thing?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to go over actually the whole thing. I'm going to probably discuss the issues that are important for you. I heard you and Dave talking about you're interested in a tag system, right? What it does to the data and what it is. So, let me start first with the data format. So, in class 6, everybody knows we use BOT, but now with the transition to class 12 software, and I think Hall D is also using EVIO as standard data carrier or DSC format. It was not good for us because we are doing data mining, we are putting large quantities of the data together, and I wanted to get some compression to the data.
to save space. And we implemented a new data format, which is packed banked data format. It's very similar to BOSS, but it's much more compact. And the good thing, it has interfaces both to Java and C++. And unlike BOSS, it has so-called dictionaries, which means that every file can have a completely different structure of the banks, and that doesn't matter for the interface because it interprets the bank using the dictionary that is in the file. And these buffers, these compact buffers, we are storing still in EVIO format. So it goes as a one entry into EVIO format, but before it goes in there, it undergoes compression using gzip, and that reduces the file size from 40% to 60%, depending what kind of data you are dealing with. Photo production, record production, it varies. So we converted everything to IG5 and used the compression, and this is the result what we got, just simply converting from BOSS format to our format without using compression. You reduce the size by 30%, and then when you apply the compression, you reduce by another 40-50%. Essentially, you drop down by size three times, going from original BOSS files that we had. Yeah.
How's this different from just the standard EVIO?
It's a different format. What do you mean? How is it different compared to if you store it in EVIO? Yeah, it's about the size of the BOSS. So three times less. There is a trick to that. Actually, the way, in order to check against BOSS against the standard EVIO, I used the class 6 and class 12 implementation of EVIO writer, which for everything they are using integers and doubles. And that's not a necessary thing. For example, for status flags, they are using integers, which is 8 bytes. For any kind of small things, like, for example, sector information, they are also using integers. So when you actually convert it to standard class 12 EVIO, I assume that's going to change in the future, but for test runs, it's actually the size of this blows up. So there is no way of exactly changing. But if you implement it in a much nicer, compact way, I assume it's going to be slightly larger than this. So you can reduce both to EVIO 10-20%. But you're not going to get three times reduction because EVIO doesn't provide compression. Now, the important part about this, and this is what interests you, some of you mentioned that you want to have access to individual events, sort of to tag events, right? Meaning topology. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
You guys are talking to me about that if you have certain topology, you want to just read those events. So this format actually might not be good for that. But I'll explain later how you can actually make it better. So the data is actually stored in a bucket. So the bucket is usually 5,000 events. And the reason for this is if one event is usually 2 kilobytes, 3 kilobytes with reduced banks, right? It's not the whole entire data. Might be 10 kilobytes. And that's not really very well compressible. I get probably 10% compression on that, 5 to 10%. So what I did is I created these buckets which store 5,000 events, then run compression on those 5,000 events, and that's how I get about 40 to 60% compression. And then I store these buckets, yeah.
I'm just trying to understand your application, because your data already exists in BossBotNet on the tape.
Yes.
And you want to store it somewhere else, is that why you want to compress it?
So the data mining is sort of the data has to be available on demand right now, and you can analyze it on the fly. So the tapes are not good for that. So we are storing it on our NAS disk at ODU. And this distribution service works. I'm not going to talk about the Clara, but the whole story is about this Clara cloud computing. So you send a request for the file, you get the data in. So it has to be accessible. But you are by this compression thing, you are saving space on a disk, and also you are saving time on a download because compressed data comes in, then you uncompress and analyze it. So it's using gzip and it's stored in EVIO file as a link, right? So header file, header of EVIO file, this was a recent change, they allow you now to put XML into header, contains the dictionary for each bank, and also contains some EPICS information for each file, each RAM file that I have. There is some HTML format that I store everything in there. And when you are streaming these files, actually we are using CMessage, standard protocol for Clara, and we are sending this IG5 byte buffer, which is usually typical size for 5,000 events is about 2 megabytes. Right? So 2 megabytes of just bytes, and there is a string containing the dictionary goes with it, so the client program knows how to interpret these banks, essentially. And also, I have, this is an XML file that goes with it. It has some also attributes with EPICS information, so the client knows where this file comes from, what are the properties, how to interpret the banks inside, and so on. Now, this is about the data format. Now, on top of this, we have, I developed this so-called tagged file system. Now, when I have the files, I have to store them, and I have to know where they are to categorize them and to search through them. So I decided to do this sort of create a metadata for each file on the server. And metadata provides basically tags for the files. Right? And the search is done by tags. And I'll show in a moment what that means. So, and there are some property-related information to the file, access information, and essentially this it has three types of entries. Each file has tags which are describing the experiment. In this case, for example, this is an electron run, energy is 4.7, target is hydrogen. It has access, click on properties, basically. It shows the proxy information and shows the DPE information, and this will also come later. I'll show you where these play a role. And also each file has properties, which is EPICS properties, called Faraday cup. In this case, I'm dealing with electroproduction experiment for now, but you can have their flux information and entries of the number of entries in the file. MD sum, for example, is one of the properties which lets you identify any inconsistencies between the files that are stored in different servers. So this is how the files work. So what does it mean to search from tags? Like, imagine this. Every row represents one file or set of files, right? Each file is assigned any arbitrary number of tags. For example, in this case, this is EG2 experiment, target, solid target. This is EG2 experiment was running on solid and a liquid target simultaneously. So target iron, target deuterium, beam was electron beam, and energy was 4.7. The second set is the same experiment with 5.7 GV energy, and the target was carbon. This one has electron beam. This is E2B, completely different run. It was running on one solid target. There was no liquid target. C12, 4.7 GV energy. And this is some photoproduction experiment file. So these are set of files, right? So if you choose one tag, let's say, there is an algorithm that you are searching files by tag. And this is not known thing on the web. Usually, they tag the file too, right? So when you choose, this red one is what you select at the tag. Let's say you're interested in the carbon data. The program returns you a list of the files and also tags that are associated with this file. So for example, this set of files that contains this tag, target C12, so this is a good candidate for that tag too. So it returns you EG2, target D2, even this one didn't have any liquid target, beam electron and a different energy than this one, but all these tags are associated with each other. And then you can narrow the search by selecting which specific tags you want. And for example, if you selected this and then you select 4.7 energy, since this one also can be associated with target C12 tag, but beam energy 4.7 doesn't exist in this tag, so you end up basically with only one set of files. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, only two questions.
Okay, so maybe we allow only one, right?
Yeah, well, okay. I have three.
One more.
Okay, so the first maybe I missed, but how this tag information stored? I mean, this metadata.
It's an XML file.
So the XML file, mm-hmm. which is related to data file, or one XML file for several data files?
No, no, it's a one XML basically XML database for the whole entire. So what happens is you install this TagFS, you tell them where your files are. It goes through the files, it assigns the tags, and it depends on the directory structure. And then there are standard procedures how to figure out properties. It scans all the file for the properties, assigns all these properties, and this is stored in one, just one database that contains information of the files on that current, on that system.
Okay, then the problem is that probably somehow unsynchronized, I mean that the file changed or something changed, the database should be changed.
Yeah. Well, file changes, if you can actually probably run a cron job, something to just verify. I have scan and verify functions in TagFS. It goes actually and finds out whether file has changed. And that's one of the things. The file property, there is an empty sum in there. And that actually, you can figure out that the file changed. And well, these properties are essential to the file. Tags are not essential, right? If you change the file, that's still the same run. You did recalibration or something like that. Properties might have changed.
Yeah, I just mean that
when it detects the change by MD sum, it can run this property algorithm on that file and overwrite whatever it was there.
Yeah, I just mean that there are actually two approaches for that. One of them that includes this information in files, like you, for example, have in your JPEG format, and this is so here it's external information attached to files.
Yeah.
Then when you feel external, you have a problem synchronizing it. Okay. And the second question was that this association is provided automatically just for what files have what tags.
The database, it's a method.
Is that, so this is target SQL, and it follows all files that have target SQL, and it shows all the tags that is have this file.
Yeah. It's an algorithm there that goes. Each file set has a tag set, and whichever tag set contains C12, then it's decomposed and it's added to a different tag set, and it returns you with all possible tags that are associated with this one. So, in our case, what we do is, so this is Clara platform, right? Currently, we have only one, this is called proxy, and these are called DPs. And the reason for doing that was Clara actually requires direct access to the computer that you want to interact with, so it's a C message to this public subscribe protocol. And that was, the difficulty came when we started putting different computers with different NAS disks behind the firewall. And our university didn't allow us to put all these NAS disks behind, in front of the firewall to be visible to the outside world. And what we had to do is we modified the Clara in a way that it can work with through proxy, which means that you have one platform running and you can send a request through that platform to the computer internal that is behind the firewall that doesn't have a direct connection. And we ended up with this so-called, we call it star-like configuration, where you have a platform running and then you have several DPEs, which is dynamic process environment, each of them with their disk and this tag effort, which has the catalog of the files that is stored on this disk. Right? We are building the third system to accommodate this. And each of them basically have this tag file system, and it contains list of the files, and it tells you its DP address, which is important because when you are sending a request to the proxy, you send it to the proxy and say which DP has that file. And you can also send a request to download that catalog, goes through here, it figures out what DPs are connected to it, it downloads this TagFS metadata from all the DPs, then combines them together. Of course, if there are multiple files that exist on several of the disks, it checks for the MD sum. If all the MD sums are consistent, which means there's no difference between the files, that file is included in the list, and if there is inconsistency, it just gives a report that this file might be broken, or you better check that. And then, once you get this list, we run our analysis on that list. Okay? And the list basically knows the name of the files, the tags of the files, how to find it, and where to find it because of the IP address.
Okay.
And that's how the whole system works. And in our layer, it's actually what we do is we don't download directly the file, but you download it through filters. And the filter is, there is filter and there is pre-processing. So filter is essentially what you would call the topology. I have a very sophisticated topology parser that you can indicate what kind of particles you want in the final state, which includes specific particle IDs, or you can say, for example, two positive tracks, three negative part tracks, and as many neutral tracks as you want. So there are different ways of, it's very flexible. You can basically get any topology you want. What happens here is that your client program actually goes through the data, sorts out only events that correspond to that topology, and then goes through the pre-processing data, which does actually momentum corrections, plot momentum corrections, and all the codes for pre-processing exist on all the platforms, it's just part of the package. It does momentum corrections and then returns you the data, streams you the data with the dictionary, and you save it. So this is what's happening in our case. If I understood you guys correctly, you wanted to have sort of way of downloading the whole data, access to the data with certain topology, right? This is what was going on with hugging the event. Now, our data file itself doesn't create a list of the topology, what's inside of the event. This tag system works only for files which create sort of topology of all the experiments. But these are the ideas that can help probably doing that. So one of the ways to do that, you can write separate files, and the photo production experiment in Hall B actually does that. They write for different topologies. They have five different topologies, and they write five files for each run. And then each file can also have, along with the other tags for experiment conditions, also can have a tag associated with what kind of topology that is. And then when you search through these files, you can find, or you can select to have only files analyzed that have certain topology. That's it. And the other thing that I was thinking, I had this idea before, you can actually rearrange file and write events not in a sequence that they occurred, but depending on the topology, going, for example, from two particle final state to three, to four, to five, and just write it in that way and keep a map of reduced map sort of where each topology starts. You probably need five numbers there or something. Where to jump, for example, for three track events, right? And then have the program that is doing actually selection, which goes by the topology on my end, just to read that map and only read those events and return it to you. So those are two possible ways that you can actually do it on the back end, that when you request something with the topology, the analyzing program will know how to find those topology maps inside of the file header and just read partially to find it. Okay. And that's it. Yeah.
Well, I think correctly, this is basically how the user can access data that has already been reconstructed, right?
Absolutely right, yeah.
So how do you make sure that the user when he does an analysis, does the analysis on a over a consistent data set, meaning data that has been reconstructed with the same calibration data?
Same calibration with what?
When you do the reconstruction of the data, yeah. Tracking of that stuff, you need calibration data to do the reconstruction in the first place.
That's true, right? Yeah.
And you may revise your calibration several times, right?
Right.
In other words, you have to reconstruct the data several times. And now if the user starts to pay attention, so is there a tag that tells you, I want to have version number 4 of the reconstruction?
Okay, good question. I didn't have to face that problem since we were mining the data that was taken 10 years ago. And usually, like you said, class data goes through that kind of iterative process trying to revise the calibration constant. And when they arrive to the final
version of their calibration. They write down, this is production 3, they call it, right? They go to production 0 where they cook every 10 file for calibration purposes. Then once calibration is done, you go to production 1 and then production 2. And if there's something missing, it's production 3. So the last production is assumed to have the best, finest calibration possible. And those are the parts that we put on our service. So this was not designed for more dynamic purposes. I think work is still going on. So this final result, and you are assuming that all the work is being done on that already, and nobody is looking at this data to recalibrate it.
But I know there are collaborations that have done certain, reanalyzed certain data sets many times.
Many times, but that goes on during the first 4 years.
But couldn't you address that with a tag?
I understand, but I didn't have to, like I said, I didn't have that problem, because given the specifics of clouds, when it's not being recalibrated and being data mining 10 years ago. The suggestion would be, actually, you can keep us, not as a version, I wouldn't suggest tag. You can do it with a tag.
You can do it with a tag,
but
right?
You can
you
do
have
it
the
also
same
with
data
a property.
Tag with different tags.
Yeah, you can also do it with a property, right? You can do property version, and when you select these tags here, then you can add there some criteria that filters out with the version of the file. Actually, that's a good point. You should be able to put version on, because you might have different versions of the file, right?
Right, or the reconstruction code that was used in the first place.
Here, you see, this is the thing. Inside of this file, the header file, which I call epic things, I actually lied a little bit. Header contains...
Don't lie to us.
I'm sorry. it contains epic information and some other crucial information, like the analyzer that was used, all these kind of things. So in principle, it's an XML file with properties. You can include anything you want there. And once I download this file to my system here, all the properties, so each tag file comes, is being downloaded to one file. These properties are transferred to there. So when I'm, for example, when I'm doing analysis on G11, I can print header information of the file that I downloaded, and it contains there which filter and which preprocessing thing was used here. So there is bad communication. You can actually put some information inside of the file that when you are downloading, you can channel that through and still have it on the other end to see which version you had or which code was used to reconstruct. Or even you can transfer calibration of constants also. This was one of the other things I was suggesting for class 12. Comes back to your question. We had this discussion about how we store the data files, and I was suggesting that for each data file, we were talking about the simulation, it would be nice to have some sort of format to include the geometry into the simulated file, and also when you are cooking the file, also include the calibrational constants inside of the file. We still have the database, but at some point you would like to know which calibration constants were used when this file was reconstructed. Either to go back to check whether you get the same result with the new analysis code using this calibration constant, or you can override it from the database with a new one. But that is an information that you might want to have, I'm sure, for the reference.
Fully understand. So my process on the other end is talking, the way you have it set up, I talk to the Clara platform. Is it providing me with a file that I am then downloading and then going to process locally, or is the expectation that I am basically opening up a pipe and I'm reading these events and processing them as they come in? How is that?
No, you are not processing them. You are just downloading the file, but not the entire file, only the events that correspond to your topology. And
I give it a set of tags and properties or something that I want.
Yeah.
And it will filter out and send me those events from the, are those files?
No.
When you select these tags, right, you ended up with this tag set, which is unique, let's say, right?
Okay.
Then you click a button, the program downloads the XML file onto your local machine.
Okay. That describes the actual file.
That describes the actual, this is the metadata that describes the file, and it has also this thing, where it is on the server. And then you launch the download program, it looks, takes the first file, contacts this server, and says that you have on this DB this file, and I want this specific topology from this file, right? And the process goes. This guy reads that file, selects it, and sends every 5,000, every bucket that is analyzed, it fills in another bucket, much smaller, because you select some topology, and sends it to the user, and the user saves
the file. Once I have the XML file, then I say I want to get this file with a certain topology.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming to me in a special program I have, or do you have a program that's just taking that and writing those events to a local file that I can
Process? Yes, exactly.
Okay.
I have a program that communicates with the platform, gets these files and writes it in exactly the same format that they are stored here, but from much smaller files.
So I can now, the main point of this, I distribute all my files on some cluster,
mm-hmm.
and it has all this information by which I can make selections on which files I want,
mm-hmm.
and then when I'm ready to pull the trigger, it will download all these to a local directory or one or more of them to a local directory. That I can then process with whatever software I need to process.
Yes. But not the entire process, just your selection.
Right, just the filter
subset
of the event.
Yeah.
But they'll be pre-filtered into that.
Actually, on this end, the filtering program, it's not only filtering, it also has cuts there. For example, in G11, we found out that three particle events like proton pi plus pi minus is so abundant that you are downloading almost half of the event. So I put there filters, and I want the pi plus pi minus to be around eta mark, for example. That reduces 100 times the event vector. I can actually send the cut also, not only the filter. Like I said, filter is very sophisticated. Filter and the cut.
The filter has to know how to interpret the file. This is what you're talking about. These files are all stored in this IG5 format.
Mm-hmm.
So it knows how to dig into it and apply the filter.
Yeah.
Right. So if we wanted to store it in a different format, we wanted to store our HDDM or our EVIO file.
Yeah.
Is it capable of doing that? It just wouldn't be able to apply the filter?
Yeah. Filter essentially, filter is this. You get a number of PIDs there. There is a vector you get, how many particles you have in that event, and what the charges are, and you pass it to the filter.
Right.
Filter says is it true or not.
The filter has to know what the format of the file is.
So no. Filter doesn't have to.
You also want to know how many pi pluses there are in a specific event.
Your analysis program, whatever you use to read in, that actually asks the filter. So this is interface issue, right? There are implementations of Java interfaces. However you do it, you pass filter a small program that you pass in a vector of particle IDs and it charges, and it makes a decision based on a string that you gave it. It has to be implemented. It has to be implemented. What I'm saying is that your
topology filter. The filter doesn't know about topology.
No. Filter doesn't know about the data format.
First, you have to unpick it. Unpack the 5,000 events out of the package to individual events, and then you look at each individual event, and there must be a counter in there already, I hope, that or somewhere an easy way to determine fast
how many positive,
how many negative tracks.
That's the question. What can I for ECM?
Adjust the camera, JLab.
Filter is something like this. So filter doesn't know how to read the.
Gagi keeps moving around the room.
Just come back to the people. Yeah.
So something like this. 11.
This is not gonna work.
2 minus 1 plus x plus, for example. Right.
Okay, he's writing down topology in some cryptic...
This
means I want at least one electron.
I have to.
Oh, there should be one electron in the event.
there should be two negative particles, at least one positive particle, and any number of positive particles that follows. So if you remove this, this will mean any particles including zero. So if you want one or more...
Okay, I get that part. You can write a very succinct frame to it that tells you what things you want to filter.
Yeah. Then you have a vector of...
That relies on, then, at the DPE, wherever this filter is being applied, it has to know what the format of the file is. Not just a cataloging service, but it's something that can look inside the file and event by event decide whether or not it passes the filter before it ever gets out of your farm.
Exactly.
Okay.
So somebody has to write an interface to read your data format. From your data format, construct a simple vector of IDs and the charges.
Right, okay.
And my filter will figure out whether that event passes the cut or not. That's it, yeah.
And
so the filter doesn't inherently know how to read the file. It's separate from data. It has... It's abstracted away from
the API is there, and we just put in the piece that knows how to read the file and use this filter or this vector that you're going to be able to
apply
the filter to.
Okay. I'm trying to separate any kind of algorithm from specific data.
Right.
I
think the main thing we were looking for here was basically a system that would let us manage, you know, the 10 to the 9th files that we'll have scattered all over the world, and keeping track of where they were and stuff. And I think a lot of this event selection probably isn't all that applicable to us at this point, just because of a different philosophy. But it's really you're managing these files and tagging them that's interesting.
Event selection, the topology selection was brought up to me by guys in your home that you said that they said that this is the most that they were interested in.
We ourselves would run our own routines to determine whether the event passes our selection, and then maybe we would tell that directly to the tag FS. This event I want tagged with my personal code, my personal string.
This is the confusion. You cannot say tag FS that this event is tagged. Because if we are talking about having millions of events, keeping that kind of database is as large as keeping the whole data. So,
I mean, there's another package that we've been looking at that Clio has, I think, that does do that, doesn't it, Sean?
Yeah, it does, pretty efficiently.
Yeah.
Okay, the next question. I had a question. On your last slide, you talked about what we needed to, ways we could...
Just to answer your question. So one of those things is you have to realize that I am doing this compression thing to save space, right? So all the buckets are compressed in 5,000 events. Let's say that you have two events in that bucket. You still have to read the whole bucket, which is 3 megabytes, right? Uncompress it and then pull out these two events. So I don't know whether that's efficient or not.
I'm not sure your file storage method would be applicable to us, since our files are already pretty compressed to start with. We've been very careful to keep the size down. But it's basically the system on top of everything that's managing it that we're interested in. That's really where we don't have something right now.
You are right. You don't have to take any part of our file access routines. You can just use what's on top of it, the tag FS, right? And you can introduce some different type of maps that maps out your events depending on your topology and use those maps to request specific events from the other side. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, I had one question just about, in the system that you've been describing here, how does the tag FS talk to the Clara system and the clients and everything like that? Is that a bunch of like web services or something like that? Or
no, these are a public subscribe protocol. This is internally developed the Jefferson Lab C-Message library.
So they all communicate with C-Message then?
Yeah, they all communicate through C-Message. So a request is sent there. XML request is sent there that I want files with this tag, and the XML is sent back, which contains the whole metadata that corresponds to that kind of tag.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Can a user specify a custom tag, or is that, or does the tag have to derive from something that's pre-existing in Stata?
You can specify custom tags, yes.
So, some place, obviously, where all these metadata is stored, that one data bank stays here at the lab, or where is it?
No. Metadata is stored actually on this computer, on this disk, and on this computer, on this disk, and on this computer, on this disk.
Yeah, once again, returning to my question,
we
where
need
is
to
it?
Know where all those Clara platforms are, because when you go out and broadcast and say, I'm looking for this, it has to be able to talk to every one of those, but it can ask all of his.
So what happens here, this is the ideal case scenario, where you have three universities. We have now one university, this is at ODU now. I know the IP address of this platform. I ask this one to, and it provides me with a list of DBs connected to it. And then I send a request to each DB through this proxy, asking them to provide their metadata. And each of them channels me the metadata, and this is all collected here, three metadata files. And then I have a program that join metadata, and it does complicated checks with MD sums, whether this is same file or not, consistently checks and then returns you the list, complete list that contains all the files that have that.
So the only thing I need to know is basically the address of the Clara platform.
Yes. That's all you need to know.
Yeah,
and everything else is dynamic. And all these platforms are actually, they are not now, but I'm planning on running like nightly consistency checks, like Dima was suggesting, if some file changed, to knock that out or mark it as bad or redo the properties or something like this. So this is all dynamic. You don't store any information locally that can be outdated. So anytime you try to do any kind of analysis, you just dynamically ask for the list currently present.
Okay, I think, for example, if you have the same file in two machines that have different facts. It's just a curious question.
I guess that would create a nightmare, and there should be some way of checking that and punishing users with it.
Yeah, and the second
thing. So this was developed for one specific university when only one guy was doing all this and he was sure what he was doing, and sometimes at least. But essentially, we had the idea of not allowing the other universities that they joined to build their own file system, rather than providing a method that this Clara platform, for example, DCP, you can tell him that I want copies of this one, and it can go and copy itself, so there is not a person doing that, so it will stay consistent.
Right.
This doesn't exist yet, but this was my idea when I was working on this.
Is the Punisher implemented as a web service, or no?
No, an actual guy with a baseball bat.
Okay, this there are a lot of questions.
Yeah, I know.
We're not going to get through all of this today. I'm not sure how we should structure this. I don't think we can.
Just let me point out one thing. I had the idea, and I started already working on this. So if you implement one DP, right? Here, this tag FS, you can tell him how much disk space you allocate, you want to allocate for this data storage. And I wanted to implement an algorithm that it can connect, and you tell him where to download it from. And he can connect to this platform and sort out how many files and which files have, he can connect to different platforms, which files have less frequency of occurrence. Basically, and download those files until he fills up his disk space, and then create his own tag FS and start broadcasting. So this was an idea that would be ideal, rather than having somebody to just put the same file with different tags and create confusion.
Okay. Well, let me ask one question. Use my prerogative here. On the last slide, you mentioned ways to break up the data for separate files, rearranging things so topologies can be grouped together. Isn't the topology taken care of in the all this discussion? Topology was taken care of in the filter.
Yeah.
So why do you need some other mechanism to take care of topology?
because you want probably to speed up your analysis and
speed
reduce
it up.
And reduce the amount of data that you have to into the distance, because that's the bottleneck, right? If you have, for example, a topology, you are looking for four particles in the final state, that can be in a separate file, which is 2 megabytes instead of 300 megabytes, and you can just fast read it and send it to the guy, pre-process it.
Okay, okay, yeah.
So that's the only...
So it would be like pre-analyzing by some particular filters or something like that.
Yeah.
Be a way of saying it.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. It seemed redundant.
No, it's not redundant. It's actually, if a lot of people are accessing the server, less you read...
Sure. No.
The better it is, right?
For principles already know how many tracks you have for each event because you have to reconstruct it. First place.
Yeah.
That's done on an earlier stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in principle, for each event, you already know how many tracks you have.
Yeah.
Charge tracks.
I think the main thing is that if you have things that are real needles in a haystack that happen very infrequently, we probably do want to split those off into a separate file. It's more efficient that way.
Yeah.
Than to run through all of the data and pull out a few
events.
Exactly. But if they're not, if they're happening frequently enough, then you don't bother because you don't gain that much by having another copy of the huge amount of data in another file.
Mm-hmm.
Filter those in the
file. If you have topology that is 1 in 3, and you can mix them all together, so that doesn't matter. But 1 in 1,000, like you said, rare events, you can write a separate file which is just a fraction of the data and it instantly and send it.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. I think maybe, I don't know. I feel like I'm cutting things off, but I think we're going to have to.
Okay.
We could maybe do a smaller group or something of interested parties at some point.
To
answer all these questions and just go on and on.
I'm sure you, after hearing this later on, you'll come up with some more questions and suggestions, and I would like to hear both.
Okay, so we will. I'm sorry that it's just too much.
Too much important.
And we have a full agenda anyway. But thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
And it's an interesting idea, and the committee certainly liked it, right? And
committee liked it.
I think there might be some use for it.
Oh, there is also use for it. We are actually continuing developing and improving it for data mining. It works.
And
it's being actually actively used. There are currently at all times 5 users. Downloading and analyzing the data on our servers. So it became very popular because for not only for the file access, but also all the algorithms for each of the file corrections and cuts are implemented there. So instead of users copying, pasting codes in their own, implementing their own analysis code, they are just clicking the button, I want this correction, this correction, and the data flows to you, completely corrected and completely substitution cut, and some corrections done.
Fewer mistakes.
Hmm?
Not everyone has to make the same set of mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. And you're welcome to hang out and listen to our discussion. Okay. I saw Moscow. He was angry. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So I don't know what you want to do. Maybe we could have a smaller group because I didn't get everything right. We got the gist though, I think.
Something else we're going to need to do at some point is sit down with a group and start trying to figure out exactly what features we need in being able to handle these files and the events and stuff.
See how it really works.
It is ability to keep track of files across lots of systems is potentially very interesting.
Yes, that is. It is. Okay. Well, let's go on back to the normally scheduled programming. If I can remember how to exit this thing. Let's look at the minutes from last meeting. Okay. Paul deprecated packages. Bug fix and tracking. Paul had a fix to back angle stereo wires. We talked about Beatbook 1Pi, and there's some more news on that. I put it on the agenda. It is on the agenda. And then we talked about Data Challenge 2. We had a whole meeting on that. There are minutes from that meeting. And there's going to be another one on Friday, as we said.
Event Stores is pushing ahead. I don't know if Sean wants to say anything about that. I know that he's been in touch with Valerie further since the last time. Valerie. Why not Valerie?
Yeah, and I've been studying up on all the ancient texts, so maybe I can go talk a little more.
That would make you a rabbi, I guess.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. So maybe I can talk a little bit more about all the details of the system on the next meeting.
Okay. Very good. So, but there's, like I said, there's ongoing discussion. Okay, action items. Document on database web server deployment. What the hell? Oh, I didn't do that. Restoring back. I didn't do that either. Item two, pre-caching of resources. We didn't. Did we do that? I didn't do that. We should figure out what the best practice is for that. In other
Where
words,
are you?
You want, oh, we're. I'm going through the action items from last time.
Oh, okay. Got it. Here we go.
Okay, and then event format requirements for Event Store, that's what Sean just reported on.
Sure.
So I'll carry these action over. I wonder if I indent another level for the ones that have been carried over from the previous meeting. See, eventually they'll ship right off the page.
Yeah,
you know? Okay. Any comments on these topics? I went through that fairly quickly, but a lot of that's going to be covered today. Okay, so back to today's agenda, collaboration meeting.
We have most of an agenda there. If we need another talk, I can squeeze in another time slot pretty easily.
Okay, so where are we? I'm sorry.
We're into Friday.
Okay, so OSG node tracking update. Review debriefing. Curtis is going to handle that in some other session. I guess maybe Jean 4. I'll ask Richard if he wants to say anything. He may or may not. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I want
to say something about geometry.
Yeah, geometry.
G4 and geometry. Although he's probably mad at me too right now. Okay.
I'm a little interested in the tracking on GPUs, but that's me.
I just pulled that out of mine.
Okay.
We're working on it. There is progress being made on it. But I have it's a student who's working on it, and so the progress is lower level. It's a year-long project.
Well, the door's open a crack if you want to get in the talk on it.
It will not be anything worth talking. Well, I would not give a talk on it yet.
Okay.
Fine. Okay.
It's exciting.
Hey.
Okay.
Good. So, data challenge meeting. Let's see. So we had one last Friday. I circulated minutes. I don't think I want to go through them in detail.
Okay.
Here.
It's basically a checklist of what we need to get done, I think, before we can start running.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there any discussion about the last meeting? This SRM has turned out to be a little bit squirrely.
Yeah.
What can I say about that? Let's talk about that at the data challenge meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
We've been telling Jefferson, the IT people at JLab, for a couple of years that we want to have that, and they, I think, have been politely not hearing us.
Okay. So if people don't want to discuss that, let's go on to item six. Actually, it's pretty fast now.
Okay.
So you have not addressed this meeting about this, right?
Right. I have checked in a change to ACJAM to the part of the code where it gets the magnetic field. It now uses the new reset
source method, so it's, by default it's getting the 13 ppm magnetic field map, which goes to the 1500 amp map, and I also had to make numerous small changes to the reconstruction code with respect to the parts of the code that compute the charge. There were really pretty minor changes, but there were a lot of them. I hope I got them all. But it looks like I probably got most of them because the B1Pi automated construction looks pretty good now, with the exception of a glitch in the acceptance for charged particles near phi of zero, or phi of 8 degrees away from zero. This appears to be a manifestation of the same problem that Richard mostly fixed, where it looks like near this problem region, the stereo wires are again in different forms.
I suspect this is an additional 25-year-old bug that has been another month of his life tracked.
I took a look at it myself.
You're so cynical, David.
I couldn't figure out why Richard Six didn't address this particular region by. So I don't know. But Benny confirmed that the stores are missing.
I can't quite hear you, Simon.
Sorry.
But the stores are not seen. In the small region by, it's a manifestation of the same problem that Richard tried to address.
Okay. And you were going to send stuff to Richard, and he was going to have a look at it. I don't know where that's gotten.
I already did that. Richard is aware of the problem.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, good. Thank you. So that makes a huge difference. Okay. Questions? Item 7, time of flight geometry change.
Yeah, finally, after years of promising, I did go into the TOF geometry, and I made the normal long bars close to the beam line split bars in their width. And I changed the geometry, and I changed the TOF code that translates from coordinates to bar number and from bar number to coordinate numbers.
Okay.
I changed a little bit the philosophy in that it counts through bars from the left to the right. If you have vertical bars, it looks at the bottom row. So the half paddles show up in the center as paddle 23 and 22 and 23.
That's nice.
But the top paddles, of course, they still don't fit, so I have to put them at the end of the number.
Oh, man. so close.
You were almost there.
How about using real numbers?
I hope I did. I catched all the things I had to change, but there is, of course, no guarantee. And I have not really checked that the TOF is still in the Monte Carlo, still working everything properly. That I haven't done. But I committed all the changes I did. Because I wanted
to do that in the other order, though, Benny.
No, I wanted to force people to to be my beta test.
I think I heard a scream come from the direction of Connecticut. So the game went in. But I thought we
could. So we see a hole at Pi equals zero.
Was that. You could, because the TOF technically has multiple indices. I mean, it's different from what you have to define for Jayant to give different ID numbers and copy numbers or something to these things. But then, as far as the offline is concerned, one signal is coming from something that is a paddle number and an end. And the end is the second distinction. And so that we could have stuff coming out of AC Jayant that really numbers it 1 through 44, or 42, whatever it is, plus north and south. And so the top ones could also, the two center ones on the top, could also have the same paddle number,
yeah.
Because they have a different end number, so they are distinguished from the bottom ones. Can we not do, I mean, that certainly makes things more sensible for somebody coming in outside of Jayant, doing the analysis to say, this is paddle number 40, you know, or 23 north, and this is paddle number 23 south. And happens to be that they're not connected together where the ones that are not on the beam line
you
are.
You can do that at the output of HDGeon.
Right.
At the very end of the output of the HDGeon.
Right.
I mean, actually, not at the output of HDGeon, but at the output of hittof.c. In HDGeon, in the geometry itself, you cannot do that.
Yeah, they have to be
right.
distinct from geometrical objects. But I'm wondering, so I guess it's kind of the question, because I know you're happy to be done with the class.
I'm not done yet. I wanted to say that because I have, for example, what's still missing is the TOF has in the bore or in a hole in the center. And that hole has some plastic structure there. The plastic structure, holding structure, is not in yet. And I have to put that in. That is important. Because there is a lot of beam intensity in that region and radiation, so we have to have that in there.
Mm-hmm. So I'll go back to the question, because now since this change did go in, if we do make a change to what the meaning of the paddle number is on the output, the sooner we make that, the better, since you just put in this change, because that did already change something about the meaning of the paddle number.
Right,
yeah.
But you wouldn't notice it. You should not notice anything.
In the
reconstruct, as long as you always use the two functions, white bar number to coordinate system or coordinates to bar number, you wouldn't notice.
If you're always getting the coordinates of the bar without looking at the ID itself.
Right.
So David has done some thinking about how we should number channels, okay, because he had to do that raw data thing. Okay. And I think so we should make sure that the offline is at least somewhat consistent. I'm making vague general statements here. Okay? So you can't catch me on any of these down the line. But I think I would like it if you two could get together.
We are already.
And make sure that we have something that's somewhat consistent and understandable. Even if sometimes it's good to have stuff consistent on internal level, even though it doesn't matter later, because then you can understand what the hell's going on in the code, right? And so we can have that kind of look at the code with four eyes looking at it. Actually, eight eyes.
Anyway, I mean, the only place where probably some changes have to be made is in the hit talk or C file of HDGeon.
Yeah, I'm kind of just bringing it up as a possibility. From one aspect or point of view, it's more convenient that way, but it's not. I realize it's not necessarily more convenient from all points of view or aspects.
Well, yeah.
I will be happy with whatever he wants to do.
Oh, man! When did you guys consult with each other?
He knows exactly what my statement is and my point is already, so he can make a decision on it. I'm not going to spend any more time trying to convince him. He knows what
I would just be careful. Like, if you're doing calibrations, the calibration software is like, here's the calibration constants for paddle number one. Here's the calibration constants for paddle number two. And you have them in order by, with just an integer array. But then you need separate calibration constants for 23N and 23S.
I think we have most of the calibrations for each of the channels, right? So it's independent for north and south. Am I right?
Yeah. I would just say be careful with this. What?
Nothing.
Yeah, I didn't hear that, and I'm not. I wasn't supposed to, I guess.
And since I to mention something on the CDC of the geometry again that Simon already is touching on.
Don't try to change the subject.
Right, we haven't eaten this subject, right?
Okay, no, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So I just try to use a different kind of software and also the software that Richard provided to actually test the geometry, right? In Root and in just call Power++. Particularly in Power++, I see really weird behaviors, you know, that depending on where in C I cut, I can see the straws or I don't see the straws. I mean, I see the straws plotted, but when you go and test, is it really there? Sometimes it's not, even the straight straws.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a really weird, it's a really weird behavior.
Even the straight?
Yeah. But I do see the straight straws all the time. What I did, as Simon pointed out, I confirmed his findings. What I did is I made the wall thickness of the straws out of lead. And then I shoot a Ciantino through the CDC. And then, of course, I see a really nice spike for each straw. And sure enough, if you throw a Ciantino at 90 degrees 05, then you see all straws. But you just go off to plus 3 degrees in phi, and all of a sudden all stereo straws are gone. We don't see them.
Okay.
It's really weird.
Okay.
We always knew the CDC geometry was very complicated.
Okay, I'm not going to comment on that. Leave that one alone. Okay, so that's a comment on this phi equals zero.
Well,
there, yeah. Okay, so we're going to take this TOF discussion offline, I guess. And the other thing that this brings up also is the single track, or reminds me anyway of the single track.
That was broken,
it's broken right now.
But is it just a version problem?
Well, I'm not sure. I the nightly build now, I switched it to being CCDB 0.9 and JANA 0.7.1.
Funny you should mention that.
That was my gut feeling yesterday, you know, afternoon.
So last night I tacked 0.7.1P1, which is a kind of a patch version, which is fixing some other little more or less minor issues that have come up. This is addressing something you mentioned, Sean, that you and I exchanged some emails on with the default directory that it puts resources in. If you don't set your environment variable. It tries to use your username, and it gets that from your user environment variable. And there was code in there that said if your user environment variable is not set, it should just use JANA as your username. But there was a flip in the logic that it was accidentally always using JANA if your user environment variable was set. If it wasn't set, it was using null and segfault. So that got fixed. Hopefully that's not actually going to be something that most people would run into. We're going to use set the JANA resource to your environment variable because you probably want to tell it to use a specific directory other than it have use something inside of /temp. The other things that it does, actually, I did fix the this is something I talked with Benny about that he was bringing up with the plugin. There are make plugin scripts that you can get. This is actually done both in the SimRecon and in JANA, but they have these make plugin scripts. So if you want to make a new plugin, you can just run this script and give it the name of the plugin, and it will create a directory with skeleton files in there. And it used to be that it placed a make file in there that would work with our make system. Now it places an S construct file in there. It works with the S con system. And it honors the JANA MI or HALD MI environment variable, depending on which script you use to make it. Then he reported that he was able to use this, and it did actually compile the plugin for him. But all that's in this new P1 version that is on the web now and available for download and use. And if anybody runs across any other issues, things that are not working that should be working, let me know, and we'll make another one. There's been a few more growing pains on this version, but there's been a lot of more major changes than usual that we have.
I have a somewhat related question to the nightly things. There was a something that came up again at the software review was the code validation. running or check regular code validation checks. Are we anywhere along on that path?
Well, I put together a shell script, and I'm running it in cron. It fails miserably right at the very beginning.
Okay.
And so I've done it kind of backwards. I got something to run every night that doesn't do anything rather than getting something to run first and then every night. But it's out there. I get email twice a week reminding me that I haven't done anything on this.
But wait, what are we talking about? There was a couple of things that I had. One was the code analyzer that would try to tell you things that are wrong with your code.
Yeah.
By looking at, there was another that was running like Valgrind or something that will tell it that actually runs if there are issues. So which one are you?
Pursuing the Valgrind thing.
Okay.
Where the performance, you know, where it spends the time and things like that.
Memory leaks and things like that.
Yeah. And you get a GUI to look at it.
One of them, exactly.
So, So this is I'm looking at the performance aspect, I believe. It runs very slowly, apparently.
Very slowly.
Yeah. Okay, so that's one I'm pursuing. You're right. There's multiple issues that one could be addressed. That when you say Valgrind, you might mean any of them.
There are many packages under Valgrind.
Yeah, yeah. So we should try to maybe do at least two or three of them, I think.
Now, I started working on that suppression file, which is one thing we need in order for Valgrind to give us something useful.
It was just too much.
It's way too much.
Unbelievable.
But I've never got very far with it. But if you're actually looking at this, I can try to send that to you as a starting point.
Okay.
But that's been kind of back burner, I would say.
Yeah. Okay.
Front burner the night before the morning of the review. And I was
really
working on it really hard, you know. And then as soon as those guys got on the airplanes, it went back burner.
Yeah, well. and the other thing we're going to have to start bringing up, and Sean brought it up this morning, is the basically switching the reconstruction code to use the database rather than hard-coded things. And probably that's something we should worry about starting after the data challenge, I would guess. Otherwise, we'll mess something up.
Well, the reconstruction code has been using the database.
Well, I mean actually pulling the constants out of it from the table Sean's put in.
No, I think we're doing that. I think we're doing that now. Almost everyone is doing that as far as I know.
Are we?
Not everywhere.
Okay.
Not always in a consistent way as well.
Okay.
Not always at the University of Connecticut.
Right. Interesting things happen in Connecticut.
Right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just to reiterate, it's not consistent in its use. The functionality has been there, and there have been some things that have been pulled out of the database for calibration database for a long time. There's a lot of numbers that were hard coded in, I think.
I see. I mean, changing the structure of the code and moving stuff into the database.
I thought that's what they were talking about.
No, it could be.
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
okay,
that's what
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
I see. I'm sorry.
But that's almost guaranteed to break things at first, so it's probably better to get the data challenge done then.
Yeah. Things like the time to distance relationship in the CDC, that's hard coded.
Yeah.
Ah.
Okay, that's a good example.
So I better get my story straight for the TOF before we do the data challenge.
Get your story straight. Okay, good. Anything? We had one recently resolved issue with the in Mantis, so I thought I'd click on that.
Yay!
So decide how to handle our calibration sets. That was poorly worded. I think that means implement resources.
Yeah.
Is that what you interpreted it to mean when you marked it as resolved? Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I marked one. And,
what this demonstrates is that the Mantis site is not completely non-functional. At least you can resolve an issue in it. You know?
And there's two. So.
Oh, you added two. Okay.
Yes,
and David's been using it anyway.
When was that? Click on that. How long ago was that actually put on there? ID number 1
11.
2011.
Yeah. 2011.
Wow.
Excellent. It's been a long time.
Yeah, fast turnaround. Stop.
Sam cooked. I went down to the river. Never mind. Okay. Maybe that's enough for today.
Any other topics for today?
All right, good. Then we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back in the city.
Question, what's a 2K4ACP sensor? 2K4ACP. It's a semaphore. Actually, that is not even a real one.
Well, obviously,
and for somebody did a Google search on flash.
Obviously, the designer was interested in the color combinations and the visual impact rather than the literal meaning, you know. It says fuck you and say what.
Not that would have immediately known.
That was recorded.
Got recorded. I wonder if I can edit this file.
Thank you. Please stand by.